So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26. King Paranjan goes to the forest to hunt. Text number 26. Tanme prasida surida krita kil vishasya. Swaram gatasya mrigayam vyasanaturasya. Kadeva Ramba Shagatam Kusamastra Vega. Visrasta Pongsnyam Ushatina Vajeta Kritya. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear queen, due to my sinful desires, I went to the forest to hunt without asking you. Therefore, I must admit that I have offended you. Nonetheless, thinking of me as your most intimate subordinate, you should still be very much pleased with me. Factually, I am very much bereaved. But being pierced by the arrow of Cupid, I am feeling lusty. But where is the beautiful woman who would give up her lusty husband and refuse to unite with him? Please repeat. My dear queen, due to my sinful desires, I went to the forest to hunt without asking you. Therefore, I must admit that I have offended you. Nonetheless, thinking of me as your most intimate subordinate, you should still be very much pleased with me. Factually, I am very much bereaved. Being pierced by the arrow of Cupid, I am feeling lusty. But where is the beautiful woman who would give up her lusty husband and refuse to unite with him? Purport. Both man and woman desire one another. That is the basic principle of material existence. Women in general always keep themselves beautiful so that they can be attractive to their lusty husbands. When a lusty husband comes before his wife, the wife takes advantage of his aggressive activities and enjoys life. Generally, when a woman is attacked by a man, whether a husband or some other man, she enjoys the attack, being too lusty. In other words, when one's intelligence is properly utilized, both the intellect and the intelligent person enjoy one another with great satisfaction. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45, Yanmai tunadi grihamedi sukham hitucham kandu yanena kurayor iva dukkha dukkham. The actual happiness of the karmis is sex life. They work very hard outside the home and satiate their hard labor. And to satiate their hard labor, they come home to enjoy sex life. King Paranjan went to the forest to hunt, and after his hard labor, he returned home to enjoy sex life. If a man lives outside the home and spends a week in a city or somewhere else, at the end of the week, he becomes very anxious to return home and enjoy sex with his wife. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yanmai tunadi grihamedi sukham hitu cham. Karmis work very hard simply to enjoy sex. Modern human society has improved the materialistic way of life simply by inducing unrestricted sex life in many different ways. This is most prominently visible in the Western world. That's in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 26th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Paranjan Goes to the Forest to Hunt and His Queen Becomes Angry. So the text again. Tan me prasida srida krita kil vishasya Svarargatasya mrigayam vyasanaturasya kadevaram vishakatam kusamastra vega dhirastapamsnyam ushati nabajeta kritye. My dear queen, due to my sinful desires, I went to the forest to hunt without asking you. Therefore, I must admit that I have offended you. Nonetheless, thinking of me as your most intimate subordinate, you should still be very much pleased with me. Factually, I am very much bereaved, but being pierced by the arrows of Cupid, I am feeling lusty. But where is the beautiful woman who would give up her lusty husband and refuse to unite with him? Maum Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristai Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutundeve Gauravani Bracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasika Dhyade Satarana. So I was asked to give class last night, but I didn't read the verse. In any case, this is rather controversial, one of the controversial verses or purports by Prabhupada, because it's talking about a controversial subject, namely the relationship between man and woman in the material world. And especially Prabhupada, sometimes he uses in his purports words like attacked. The man attacked the little woman. So we have to understand, well, we may have different ways of looking at things, but from the very beginning of Bhagavatam it warns us. It says dharmak dharmak prayojita kaitavo tra paramonimatsaranam satam, that the Bhagavatam, it kicks out prayojita, completely rejects so-called dharma. Dharma means dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That generally speaking, in the material world, under the name of sense gratification, people work in a so-called religious way. Actually, it is religious. That is to regulate one's eating, sleeping, mating, defending. It's certainly the beginning of religion. That is the beginning of religion. Without regulating eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then one can't be actually religious. Or even Krishna says, anashnatastu yogosti na chaikantam anashnata the chaiti svatnakshilasya jagato naiva charjana, that the yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. And then he says, yuktahara viharasya yukta chaita svakaramasu yukta svatna vibodasya yoga bhavati dukaha, that one who is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation can mitigate the material pains by practice of the yoga system. In other words, regulation of the senses is necessary at the beginning to make progress in spiritual life. But part of that regulation means that we have to identify what is actually going on. The material world exists as a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Urvam malamadak shikam ashvatam prahur abhiyam chadam siyasya parnani yaswam veda saveda vit. That there's a banyan tree, it has its roots upward and its branches down, and the hymns are of the Vedic leaves. One who knows this tree is a knower of the Vedas. So this material world appears to us to be very real and factual, but it's just a reflection. And it's a reflection of the spiritual world. So everything that's going on in the spiritual world is also going on here, but in a perverted and reflected way. So in the spiritual world, the highest manifestation of activity, of desire, is the relation between Radha and Krishna, unalloyed love. So there, actual love is going on, not only between Srimati Radharani and Krishna, but also between the gopis, the cowherd boys, the calves, the cows, the mothers and parents, the same quality of love is there. So here in the mature world, the perverted reflection is kam, which is translated as lust, at the beginning at least. Kam is the beginning. Arjuna asks Krishna, why is it that a person, he wants to do the right thing, he wants to do his duty, what the scriptures tell him, but he can't do it, or he doesn't do it. So Krishna doesn't say it's out of romance. It's out of love. He gets distracted because he falls in love. So he says, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudbhava, Mahashino Mahapatma, Vidinami Havarina. That is lust only, Arjuna, born of the mode of passion, which is later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. In other words, in this world, there are the modes of ignorance and passion. And in the modes of ignorance and passion, we have certain ideas, because ignorance and passion don't, they go along with them, are certain conceptions of life. Krishna says, Dhyayato Vishyam Pumsam Sangasteshu Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodo Bijayate Krodha Bhavate Sammoha Samaha Smriti Vibramsat Smriti Bramsat Buddhinasho Buddhinashat Pranashati. As soon as one looks at the mature world and thinks of trying to enjoy in the mature world, finding some object of attraction, then one wants to gratify the senses. So this is called, one acquires lust. So lust is nothing but looking at the material world, or lust is obtained when we look at the material world, trying to figure out what's in it for me. And what's in it for me is, more or less, the only thing outside of Krishna consciousness is sense gratification. And what's in it for me, if we go into the astrological, because point of view, that business, in astrology, marriage is understood from the seventh house relationships. Any kind of relationship, of how we relate to others, is more or less seen first from the seventh house. There is the first house, the self, and opposite the first house is an other people that we're relating to. They say opposites attract. Therefore, things that are opposite, sometimes they're attractive to other people. But the seventh house is also business. Therefore, marriage is also a kind of business. It's supposed to be, it's give and take. I give to you and you give to me, and we have a business deal going on. Of course, if it was put into those terms, it wouldn't be very attractive, and the material world wouldn't go on very well. And therefore, we create a romantic atmosphere, an idea that this is not just business, it's not lust, it's not gratification of the senses, it's love. Otherwise, people wouldn't be very much attracted to it. Or maybe they would. Maybe they don't really care. In any case, it's more or less glossed up. Romeo, Juliet, Minnie Mouse, Mickey Mouse, Tarzan, Jane, whatever. Something has to be presented that makes it a little bit more glorious than simply gratification of the senses. Although, really, that's what it really boils down to at the end, but it may take a few years to realize that. And, as Prabhupada writes here, he uses the word attacked. So why does he use the word attacked? It's not that Prabhupada was unaware. He could have said, you know, something else a little bit less controversial. But the Bhagavatam is meant to show us things as they actually are, rather than what we're actually imagining them to be. Because from lust comes anger. That is, when we try to gratify our senses, they're never really gratified. And therefore we become greedy. if they are gratified to some degree, with temporarily our urges are satisfied, then we become greedy to gratify them some more. But there comes a time where we can't gratify them enough, we become frustrated. And out of that frustration comes delusion. And we create a whole understanding of reality based upon our delusions. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is trying to explain to us that actually, although we may call things one thing, but they're actually something else. And therefore, rather than using some other word, it uses the word as attack. But it is not attacked, and actually it is, in one sense. Here in the material world, everyone is looking for a victim. No one looks around thinking, let me become a servant. No one came here to become a servant. Everyone came here to become the master. And how we become the master may vary according to different people, how they try to lord it over the material nature. Commonly in other yugas, men would be aggressive and women would become present themselves as an object of aggression. But actually, it's just more or less the same thing. If women make themselves very beautiful, then there's something to be aggressive about. If they made themselves as ugly as they could, things wouldn't go on very well. Therefore, the cosmetic industry is quite a big industry. People are starving, supposedly people are starving all over the world, but they're spending billions and billions of dollars on the cosmetic industry. If you go to a mall in America, if you were trapped inside a mall, you'd probably die from starvation because there's nothing to eat in it. But you could make yourself very beautiful because there's a lot of cosmetic stores in the malls. And dress stores and whatever else. So this is the idea. Women want to make themselves to be as attractive as possible so that they can attract an aggressive man. Aggressive in the sense that they have to be more or less stimulated. If they made themselves very attractive and the man was, well, that looks nice, but I don't really care very much. They really actually want to stimulate a certain response. And if the response, of course, is so-called, here it says aggressive, then the relationship goes on nicely. Because there's a reflection of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is not that Srimati Radharani dresses herself up and Krishna takes a glance and says, that doesn't look very well, that doesn't look very good. No, he becomes stimulated when he sees Srimati Radharani, but not in the same way that we become stimulated here in the material world. But that we can't imagine what the stimulation is in the spiritual world. Because we're not in the spiritual world, we're in the material world. But here it's that of mutual gratification of senses, which is more or less the aggressiveness or being attacked. We're looking for victims. And everyone, we need willing victims. The man becomes a willing victim for the woman, and the woman becomes a willing victim for the man, and that way they enjoy sense gratification. Even eating that potato that's on the plate is a victim. It was just growing up in the ground, it wasn't harming anyone, and someone threw it out of its house and boiled it and threw it on our plate as a victim. We may not look at it because we don't hear the carrot or the potato complaining very much. But they've done research and they actually find out that there's a silent scream when you stick your fork into the potato. It doesn't enjoy your attempts at, kissing the potato. And if that potato is not being offered to Krishna, then the result is that you have to suffer the result of killing potato. You go to before Yamaraj, he may not point out that you killed the potato, but it's included in your, in your, what do they call that? Well, your score. Similarly, everything we do in the material world, although it may be under the guise of philanthropy, altruism, nationalism, or love, or whatever else, it's all under the realm of sense gratification, either personal or extended, and one becomes responsible, because it's more or less looking at the material nature and seeing what's in it for my enjoyment. And in order to enjoy the material nature, we have to control it. So marriage is more or less an agreement that you can control me and I can control you, but it's according to certain rules and regulations. Either we make them up ourselves, which is usually unsuccessful, as we can see from the history of modern marriage, either within our society or outside of our society. As soon as we start making up the rules of what marriage is supposed to be about, then it usually doesn't turn out very well, because everyone is thinking, you're supposed to follow the rules, but I'm not. That the rules are for you. Just like we call each other Prabhu, Prabhu, and we come to the movement, we think, oh, this is a very nice movement. Everyone's calling me the master. That's what I thought. I was always looking for a society where people would recognize me as the master. And of course, I call other people master too, just to make them feel good. But I don't really believe it. It's obvious who the real master is. Similarly, marriage is supposed to be a relationship based upon regulating sense gratification, so that it can be the results of sense gratification, namely children, the paraphernalia, as it says here, Pungsa Striya Maituni Bhavame Tan Tarara Mitriya Granti Mahu Ato Griya Shetra Sutapta Vitara Janasya Moho Yamahang Mameti. That naturally there's going to be urges. It is not that it's unnatural to have sex urge. Prabhupada one time told a devotee, this is a sign of health. It's not that if we're feeling sexual urge, that's very unhealthy. No, that's a sign that we're actually healthy. When we get old and decrepit, we have no more energy. Then you don't have to worry about sex urge. But in the meantime, if we're healthy, then there may be some sex desire. But it's supposed to be regulated. In other words, and when it's regulated, then it can be, that regulation means to utilize the energy in Krishna service. And if it's being utilized in married life, then the house, the wife, the children, everything else is also supposed to be engaged in Krishna service, and therefore it becomes purifying. But here it says, Prabhupada's explaining about those who are not devotees, that the whole idea is just to feel our aggressive. In astrology, aggression is which planet is aggressive? Mars. And Mars is symbol for which of the... What's that? And what I mean, between male and female, which one is Mars? What's that? Male, yeah. Whenever you have... What do they have? That they have this Mars and Venus. And Venus is the planet of which, male or female? Female, yes. We have a few astrologers here. But that's just common without being an astrologer. You know, whenever you depict women, it's always Venus. Venus, the goddess of love. Actually, Venus happens to be male in Vedic astrology, in Vedas. Is that right? No, the moon's a male. The moon's a male. Venus is Sukracharya in the planetary portfolio. So is Sukracharya... Is he very dainty, and what is he doing a lot? He's involved in wars all the time. You know, he's fighting on the side of who? The demons. And who's, and Mars is Kartikeya, the commander-in-chief of the demigods. So even in the universe, male and female, or at least Mars and Venus, they're fighting with each other all the time. But anyhow, that's on the planetary system. Similarly, Here in the material world, there is a certain amount of give and take, but the whole idea is based upon one's enjoyment for the materialists. Somehow or another, there may be a way of enjoying that's different between male and female, but the central point is let me gratify my senses, let me enjoy. And to do that, there may be different ways of doing it. But if it's not regulated, then it becomes unpleasant both for the man and the woman, eventually. Because that which in the beginning and the end is blind to the process of self-realization, which is based upon sleep, laziness, and illusion, said to be happiness, the mode of ignorance. So in the beginning, it may appear, from the beginning and the end, there may be, it's just distressful, actually. Therefore, in the mode of passion, at the beginning at least, it appears that it's going to be just like nectar, and then at the end, it's just like poison. So when we introduce the mode of passion, it means that there's some regulation, but the whole central point is desire to enjoy, but just an enjoy in a way that makes it more, the enjoyment more pleasant. It gets rid of some of the rough edges. Not that you walk down the street and you see a woman, immediately jump on her and there is rape. That would be very unpleasant. No, we dress it up. We have nice dresses, nice food, candlelight, songs, music, the birds are chirping, etc. So there's some happiness. There is some, you know, it's... But if it becomes unrestricted, then it turns into ignorance. And then in the mode of goodness, of course, then then one sees things properly, and then one can actually engage in the same activities, but for a higher purpose, for Krishna consciousness, to help elevate one out of the materialistic stage of life. So Prabhupada is using the word attack for those who are simply in ignorance and passion, because that's really the mentality, but it's just dressed up. But the same thing can go on in household life for a higher purpose, and therefore it becomes transcendental. The purpose is transcendental. Therefore, we should understand that whether we're talking about sex life or eating, sleeping, mating, defending, if it's done in ignorance and passion, it becomes very unpleasant. And if it's done in Krishna consciousness, then the same activity can help elevate us out of the material concept of life. So, we'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Yeah, of course. Someone has to suffer. Well, suffer in the sense that not only the expense of someone else, but it's our own expense. Because anything that causes forgetfulness of Krishna automatically will, as soon as we forget that Krishna is the proprietor, Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the actual friend of everyone, everything should be done to please him. As soon as we forget that, we become bound by our activities. Whatever mode of nature they're in, we become bound by them. Even the demigods in the higher planetary systems, there's a description of their sex enjoyment or their sex life, and it's comparatively very nice. I don't know if we read it here recently, but I gave class somewhere else. But there, the demigoddess and the demigods, they enjoy sex life on the shore of the ocean of milk. And their sex life is such is that they don't, they have sex life, but there's no pregnancy until the last year. And then the woman becomes pregnant and it's all over. I mean, at least for them. So they're able to enjoy sex life, and it's thousands of times, Prabhupada said, nicer than ours. The women there are thousands of times more beautiful, the men are more powerful, but still they become morose after such enjoyment. But they take it as a bodily concept of life. And then they bathe in the ocean and then they have sense gratification again. Ocean milk. So that's the nature of the material existence, is you can't have material happiness without also having, along with it, distress. But because of the lack of transcendental happiness, and because of our desire to happiness, then we have to accept the distress along with the happiness. So anything we do here in any field of life which is not Krishna conscious, there is distress. But the more intense things, such as sex life, which is one of the more intense experiences in the material world, that it has its comparatively greater happiness and also comparatively greater distress. Yes. No, Sukracharya is definitely not weak. He's quite powerful, Sukracharya.
But in the picture of the planets, it is weaker a lady than a warrior.
No, Venus is quite a. People have this idea that Venus is all passive and nice and sweet. But Venus could be quite heavy too. What's that?
You don't see us more strong and more heavy a warrior than a nice lady?
I don't understand.
You don't see a warrior is stronger than a nice lady?
Well, Cleopatra conquered, what's his name? Mark Antony and Caesar. Oh, that was pretty good. What's that? No, but they it was better than a sword.
Then my question is for no use, because I see in my eyes a warrior is stronger than
that. In some ways, but if you get just like you may have a very strong tiger, but if he's trained up in the zoo and he does all kinds of tricks, he may be more powerful than his keeper. But he's just, the keeper says jump, and he jumps. He says roll over, he rolls over. So you have this, sometimes you see this big, big man and this little woman. And the little woman says, you know, shut up. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. There's a big, big man, but he's being controlled by this little woman. So that's life. Because sense gratification is what rules everyone. That's what everyone's looking for. One devotee, he gave this story. He was in the parking lot, and he met this man, this big, big man from Germany, Manidhar. And he tried to distribute a book. And he was just about to take the book when his little wife, tiny little wife, walked over and said, give him back the book. So the man gave back the book. Because, so Manidhar said, no, take the book, it's all right. He said, no, my wife told me I couldn't take the book. He said, don't worry, she'll give you sex anyhow, even if you take the book. So finally his wife said, give back the book. And finally he gave a donation and said, shut up. That was the first time in his life he ever, he dared to transgress the rule. So that's materialistic. Generally speaking, sense gratification rules. And, that's the way things work. Who's ever at the controlling, it's because the other person usually desires sense gratification more than the other person, and they use it as control. Or both desire at the beginning, and then it comes down to who's going to control the situation. Anyhow, the material world is quite complicated, especially when you're illusion. It appears very even more complicated. Yes. Outside of, has the elephant. Yeah, that's there. Maybe nice, so-called covered over with sweetness, but the idea is just to gratify our senses. We're unconscious. we're living in an we're not aware of ourselves, nor are we aware of spiritual life, with the real in materialistic life. We're living a dream where I'm the center of existence, and everything is there to serve me, to serve what? My senses. So, as I said, no one really exists here to serve our senses. So, therefore, we have to be aggressive in order, somehow or another, get our senses gratified. So, we're here looking for victims. And someone who becomes a willing victim of ours, they become our, you know, our lover or whatever else. They're the object of our attraction. And those who help us get our desirable objects, they become our friends. And those who are impediments or impeding our sense gratification, they become our enemies. In any case, very quickly we see that my so-called lover becomes my enemy, and my so-called friends becomes my enemies too. And my so-called enemies, when they help me gratify my senses, suddenly they become my friends. So the material world exists only in a relationship between people trying to gratify their senses. And we give different labels to it, friends and enemies sometimes. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.